I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal, before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the earth.
I was thinking, as you know, as you came down, and we knew it was a success, and it had only been 8 days, just a week, a long week, that this is the greatest week in the history of the world since the creation.
Footsteps on the moon, the flight of Apollo 11.
All right, 35 seconds and counting. We are still go with Apollo 11. 30 seconds and counting. Astronauts report it feels good. T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Here we got a roll program.
Neil Armstrong reporting their roll and pitch program, which puts Apollo 11 on proper heading.
Slowly, slowly, but gathering speed. Going beautifully, burning hot.
Plus 30 seconds.
Roll complete and efficient program. One Bravo
is a abort control mode. Altitude's 2 miles.
Oh, well, Houston, you're good at 1 minute.
Downrange 1 mile, altitude 3-4 miles now. Velocity 2,195 feet per second. We're through the region of maximum dynamic pressure now.
Mark, mode 1, Charlie.
Cliff Charlesworth taking a staging status.
This is Houston, you are go for staging.
Inboard cutoff.
Inboard engines out.
I'm inboard cutoff.
Inboard cutoff exactly on schedule. Apollo 11 now 3,650 miles an hour.
Downrange 35 miles, 30 miles high. Standing by for the outboard engine cut down now.
Staging.
Outboard.
And ignition.
Armstrong reporting staging and ignition. The first stage engine that burned out exactly on schedule. The second stage engine that lit off.
Houston thrust is go. All engines, you're looking good.
A few hours later, correspondent Krim, along with correspondent Merrill Muller at the Cape, described the next critical maneuver. First, Krim.
We just had TLI, translunar injection, the maneuver to send the astronauts toward the moon.
As soon as they get this maneuver out of the way and the ejection of the
Apollo 11, this is Houston. Do you read, over?
Roger, Houston, Apollo 11. We're in the VI of 35579er. EMS was plus 3.3, over.
Roger, plus 3.3 on the EMS. And we copy the EVI.
That's more than they needed.
It's a little more than they needed, yes.
4 feet per second more.
Yeah. And as soon as they get this over, they'll begin making preparations to get the Eagle Moonship away from the S-4B rocket. And when that's over, they will be able to take off all their flight gear, get into their flight coveralls, and relax for some lunch.
And relaxed they were as they sped towards the moon. Listen to Apollo Commander Neil Armstrong.
Houston, Apollo 11 inside and gave us a magnificent ride.
Roger, 11, we'll pass that on, and it certainly looks like you're well on your way now.
We have no complaints with any of the three stages on that ride. It was beautiful.
Roger, we copy. No transients at staging of any significance, over.
That's right. It was all a good ride.
The hours sped by without incident, and soon it was Thursday. Astronaut Mike Collins was trying to sight a star.
It's really a fantastic sight to that sect. And a minute ago during that auto maneuver, the reticle swept across the Mediterranean. You could see all of North Africa absolutely clear, all of Portugal, Spain, southern France, all of Italy absolutely clear. It's just a beautiful sight.
Neil Armstrong made it sound almost cozy.
I've been very busy so far. I'm looking forward to taking the afternoon off. I've been cooking and sweeping and almost sewing and, the usual little housekeeping things.
Down at Capcom, Jim Lovell, who had flown on a Gemini flight with Aldrin, asked him,
how does it feel to be airborne again, Buzz?
Well, I tell you, I've been having a ball floating around inside here, back and forth, up one place and back to another. It's like being outside, except more comfortable.
Came evening, and the men in Apollo 11 put on a TV show for the world. Neil Armstrong narrating.
You're seeing Earth as we see it at our left-hand window, just a little more than a half Earth. We're looking at the eastern Pacific Ocean, and the north half of the top half of the screen, we can see North America, Alaska, United States, Canada, Mexico, and Central America.
Mike Collins came on camera.
We are a very comfortable up here, though. We do have a happy home. There's plenty of room for the three of us, and I think we're all learning to find our favorite little corner to sit in. The zero G's very comfortable, but after a while, you get to the point where you sort of get tired of rattling around and banging off the ceiling and the floor and the side, so you tend to find a little corner somewhere and put your knees up or something like that to wedge yourself in, and that seems more at home.
Armstrong to Charles Duke in Houston as Armstrong put the capsule in a roll.
Hey, world, hold on to your hat. I'm going to turn you upside down. That's pretty sloppy, sorry. Let me try that one again. I'm making myself seasick, Charlie. I'll just put you back right side up where you belong.
Roger.
Neil's standing on his head again. He's trying to make me nervous.
Roger. 11 Houston, we see a box full of goodies there, over.
Oh, we really have them, Charlie. We got all kinds of good stuff. We've got coffee up here in the upper left and various breakfast items, bacon in little small bites, and beverages like fruit drinks. And over in the center part, we have all kinds of things. Let me pull one out here and see what it is. Roger. Would you believe you're looking at chicken stew here? All you have to do is 3 ounces of hot water for 5 or 10 minutes. Now, we get our hot water out of a little spigot up here with a filter on it that filters any gases that may be in the drinking water out. And we just stick the end of this little tube in the end of the spigot and pull the trigger 3 times for 3 ounces of hot water and then mush it up and slice the end off it. There you go. Beautiful chicken stew.
But tucked away in the Apollo cabin were other things beside food and equipment. Back on Earth, President Nixon told what they were.
When Frank Borman was in the Soviet Union, he was presented 2 medals... from the wives of the cosmonauts, the Russian cosmonauts, who lost their lives in their space program. And at the request of their wives, he will leave those medals on the moon. They will also be taking with them the medals that were given to 3 of our astronauts who were killed in the Apollo flight. And they will leave on the moon the patches from those medals.
And the president said Apollo 11 was carrying 50 flags from all the states to be brought back from the moon. While the astronauts were bringing those Russian medals to the moon, the Russians themselves had sent an unmanned spaceship to circle the moon ahead of Apollo 11. There was speculation Luna 15 would come down on the moon, scoop up some rocks, and return to Russia. However their effort turned out, the Soviets had their eyes, like everyone else in the world, on Apollo 11. Correspondent Irv Chapman reported from Moscow.
Soviet people have been state fans ever since Sputnik. Russians ask any American at hand for the latest progress reports on the Apollo flight. You get the feeling that full-scale live coverage in this country would have had a very high rating indeed. The news stories in the Soviet media always stress the personal heroism of the astronauts. While the Soviet man on the street congratulates the American people quite sincerely, I think, he can't help wishing the three men in the spaceship were Tovarishchi, comrades.
Friday, Apollo 11 left the pull of Earth and entered the embrace of the moon. Armstrong and Aldrin crawled inside Eagle, the lunar lander. Everything okay. Around the moon spun the Russian Luna 15. The Russians assured the U.S. it wouldn't endanger Apollo 11. Saturday afternoon. The hour had arrived for Apollo to orbit the moon, the LOI. Bruce McCandless in Houston passed up the word.
Apollo 11, this is Houston, over.
Roger, go ahead, Houston, Apollo 11.
11, this is Houston, you are go for LOI, over.
Roger, go for LOI.
Apollo 11 went round the moon. During the communications blackout, Jack Riley in Houston said,
Apollo 11 should have started this long burn. Duration, 6 minutes, 2 seconds. Delta V, 2,917 feet per second. Given that burn, we expect an orbit of 61 by 169.2 nautical miles.
Millions around the world waited for word from Apollo. The tension built. In Houston, Jack Riley said,
It's very quiet here in the control room. Most of the controllers seated at their consoles, a few standing up.
Finally, at 1:48 p.m., Bruce McCandless put in a call to Apollo.
Apollo 11, Apollo 11, this is Houston. How do you read?
Reading loud and clear, Houston, how are
you? Roger, reading you the same now. Could you repeat your burn status report? We copied the residuals and burn time, and that was about it. Send the whole thing again, please.
It was like perfect.
And 20 minutes later, Neil Armstrong, about 100 miles away from the moon, said,
Pictures and maps brought back by Apollo Station 10 have given us a very good preview of what to look at here. Looks very much like the pictures, but like the difference between watching a real football game and one on TV, no substitute for actually being here.
We're getting a good view of the track leading into the landing site now. For your information, your current altitude is 148 nautical miles above the surface.
I'm unable to determine altitude at all looking out the window. I couldn't tell whether we're down at 60 or up at 170.
I'll bet you could tell if you were down at 50,000 feet.
This is Apollo Control. That separation maneuver was performed as scheduled, giving the command module a delta V of about 2.5 feet per second, which should give a separation to the two vehicles of about 1,100 feet at the beginning of the descent orbit insertion maneuver.
You got right on US-1, Mike.
We're now in the approach phase. Everything looking good. Altitude 5,200 feet.
Manual attitude control is good.
Roger, copy.
Altitude 4,200.
Houston, you're a go for landing, over.
Roger, understand. Go for landing. 3,000 feet.
Copy.
Alarm. 1201.
1201.
Roger, 1201 alarm. We're go. Same type. We're go.
2,000 feet, into the ag, 47 degrees.
Roger.
47 degrees.
Eagle looking great, your go.
Altitude 1,600. 1,400 feet, still looking very good.
Roger, 1202, we copy it.
35 degrees. 35 degrees, 750, coming down to 23. 700 feet, 21 down, 33 degrees. 100 feet, down at 19. 540 feet, down at 30, down at 15. At 400 feet, down at 9. Stay forward. 10 and 50 feet, down at 4. 30 and a half down.
60 seconds.
Lights on. Down 2.5. Forward. Forward. That's 40 feet down, 2.5. Picking up some dust. 30 feet, 2.5 down. Great shadow. Four forward, drifting to the right a little. 6.5.
30 seconds.
Forward just. Okay. Contact light. Okay, engine stop. APA at a descent. Post control, both auto descent, engine command override off. Engine arm off. 413 is in.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You're looking good here.
Houston, that may have seemed like a very long final phase. The auto targeting was taking us right into a football field sized crater with a large number of big boulders and rocks for about a 1 or 2 crater diameters around it. And it required us going in P-66 and flying manually over the rock field to find a reasonably good area.
Many moons ago, it was determined the moon exerts a powerful pull on the Earth's oceans and on the Earth's inhabitants. So it really wasn't too surprising that Armstrong and Aldrin found the tug of the moon irresistible once they arrived. They had been scheduled to sleep before venturing onto the moon, but they decided instead to prepare for their rock-collecting expedition. However, for those in Mission Control, Houston, the first picture of the first step of the first man on the moon was agonizingly slow in coming.
Radio check and verify TV circuit breaker in.
Roger, TV circuit breaker in. Base 5 clear.
Roger. And we're getting a picture on the TV.
You got a good picture, huh?
There's a great deal of contrast in it, and currently it's upside down on our monitor, but we can make out a fair amount of detail. Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now.
Okay, I just checked, getting back up to that first step. It's not even collapsed too far, but it's adequate to get back up.
Roger, we copy.
That's a pretty good little jump.
This is Houston, F2, 1/160th second for shadow photography on the sequence camera.
Okay. I'm at the foot of the ladder,
the LAM footpads are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches, although the surface appears to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder. Ground mass is very fine. I'm going to step off the land now. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Tell me if you got a picture, Houston.
Well, you got a beautiful picture, Neil.
Okay, I'm going to move it.
Okay, here's another good one. Okay, we got that one.
Okay, now this one's right down sun, big west. And I want to know if you can see an angular rock in the foreground.
Roger, we have a large angular rock in the foreground and looks like a much smaller rock a couple of inches to the left of it. Over.
For those who haven't read the plaque, we'll read the plaque that's on the front landing gear of this LAM. There's two hemispheres, one showing each of the two hemispheres of Earth. Underneath it says, "Dear men from the planet Earth, first step foot upon the moon, July 1969, D.T. It came in peace for all mankind. It has the crew members' signatures and the signature of the President of the United States."
Yeah, radio loud and clear. How's it going?
Roger, the EVA is progressing beautifully. I believe they're setting up the flag now.
Great.
I guess you're about the only person around that doesn't have TV coverage of the scene.
That's all right, I don't mind a bit.
How
is the quality of the TV?
Oh, it's beautiful, Mike. It really is.
Oh, geez, that's great. Is the lighting halfway decent?
Yes, indeed. They've got the flag up now, and you can see the stars and stripes on the lunar system.
Beautiful, just beautiful.
Neil and Buzz, the President of the United States is in his office now and would like to say a few words to you, over.
That would be an honor.
Go ahead, Mr. President. This is Houston out.
Hello, Neil and Buzz. I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House. And this certainly has to be the most historic telephone call ever made. I just can't tell you how proud we all are of what you... For every American, this has to be the proudest day of our lives. And for people all over the world, I am sure they, too, join... in recognizing what an immense feat this is. Because of what you have done, the heavens have become a part of man's world. And as you talk to us from the Sea of Tranquility, it inspires us to redouble our efforts to bring peace and tranquility to Earth. For one priceless moment in the whole history of man, all the people on this earth are truly one. One in their pride in what you have done. And one in our prayers that you will return safely to Earth.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a great honor and privilege for us to be here
representing not only the United States, but men of peace of all nations, men with interest and a curiosity, and men with a vision for the future. Honor for us to be able to participate here today.
And thank you very much, and I look forward, all of us look forward to seeing you on the Hornet on Thursday.
Look forward to that very much, sir.
In the foreground, Buzz Aldrin is collecting a core tube sample.
I hope you're watching how hard I have to hit this into the ground to the tune of about 5 inches, Houston.
Roger.
Sometimes it takes about two or three paces to make sure that you've got your feet underneath you. And about two to three or maybe four easy paces can bring you a fairly smooth stop. Direction. Like a football player, you just have to put out to the side, cut a little bit. So called kangaroo hop does work, but it seems though your forward stability is not quite as good as it is in the conventional, more conventional
Neil, this is Houston. Did you get the Asshole Bar magazine?
Houston, did you get the Asshole Bar magazine?
Yes, I did. Then we got about, I'd say, 20 pounds of carefully selected, if not documented, samples.
Houston, Roger, well done.
This word from Bruce McCandless in Houston to Mike Collins, circling in Columbia.
The crew of Tranquility Base is back inside their base, repressurized. And they're in the process of doffing the plisses. Everything went beautifully. Over.
Hallelujah.
Monday morning on Earth now. Jack Riley in Houston told the world...
All systems in both Eagle and Columbia operating very well. Mike Collins asleep, Neil Armstrong sleeping fitfully. Heart rate goes down into the sleep range, but then comes up out of it, indicating he's turning around considerably.
After the triumphant conquest of the moon itself, Apollo 11 faced one more unknown hazard, the firing of the ascent engine to lift off from the moon. If that failed, there was no backup, but it went perfectly.
Roger.
After a stay of 21 hours and 36 minutes on the moon, Eagle has lifted off and has gone into lunar orbit. Mike Collins in Columbia is waiting now. In a few hours, they will actually have the rendezvous, and then they will be reunited, and all three Apollo astronauts will be together again. We're out of contact with them now. We've had loss of signal. They're both around to the far side.
Right, Frank. They did the CSI rendezvous burn. Eagle performed that burn, we think, 13 minutes ago. There's no way of confirming it for another 17 or 18 minutes until both Eagle and the Columbia Command Module emerge from behind the moon shadow back into radio view of the manned spaceflight tracking network about 13 or 14 minutes from now. Columbia, the command module, is about 15 miles above and about 150 miles ahead leading Eagle as they together orbit the moon, heading out toward the near side.
Well, I wonder if he's able to see them.
He should be able to see them from that distance.
Now let's go back to Houston, where David Snell is waiting to talk with astronaut Jim McDivitt.
Explain what the astronauts are doing now.
Well, the command module is looking at the lunar module, and he's tracking the lunar module tracking light with his optics, and he has a VHF ranging device which tells him how far away the other spacecraft is. In the lunar module, they have their radar locked onto the command module, and they'll be tracking the command module, be feeding this information, range and range rate and angles, into their computer. The computer on board the command module is computing one solution. That on board the LEM is computing another. They compare these solutions, and using charts and pencils and papers and many other things, they come up with a solution to each one of the maneuvers that they have. The ground has already provided them with some information so that they are really choosing from about five or six answers, and they're taking the best one of the bunch.
All right, they're talking to one another now up there, so let's go to Mission Control and pick up this conversation between the two spacecraft.
And they're very close, Frank. Armstrong has just told Collins he's about to turn it over to him for the docking.
In fact, I could stop right here if you like that.
That's Armstrong.
And the key man in this maneuver now is really Mike Collins, isn't it?
Right, because as we saw in our simulation, Frank, after the Eagle, the lunar module, gets within a few feet, it's impossible, as Jim McDivitt explained to us earlier, to clearly see the docking target on the command module.
Eagle, Houston, Middle Gimbal, and you might pass to Columbia. We don't have him yet.
That's right. I'm not going to do a thing, Mike. I'm just letting her hold, attitude hold.
Okay.
One or both of their antennas are out of position, and Houston apparently doesn't want to bother them with it while they're in this critical docking phase.
Okay, we're all yours.
Okay.
That's it.
This is Apollo Control. Communications are somewhat scratchy with Apollo 11. Columbia and Eagle now reunited to become Apollo 11 again.
Armstrong and Aldrin crawled back into their home aboard Columbia. Ron Evans in Houston to Collins.
Mike, you go for power arm and you go for jettison. Okay.
That meant goodbye to Eagle, sent off to circle the moon, its task done. A moment of relaxation after breaking out of moon orbit, Apollo heading for Earth. Charlie Duke in Houston to Mike Collins.
How's it feel up there to have some company?
Damn good, I'll tell you.
I bet you almost be talking to yourself up there after 10 revs or so.
Tuesday now, 1:40 p.m., Bruce McCandless in Houston passed up the word.
Stand by for a mark leaving the lunar sphere of influence. Mark, you're leaving the lunar sphere of influence, over.
Then McCandless had a bit of news about the competition.
Luna 15 is believed to have crashed into the Sea of Crises yesterday after orbiting the moon 52 times. The Soviet news agency TASS reported that, quote, scientific research in near-moon space was carried out, unquote.
A few hours later, Apollo sharpened its aim towards Earth. Doug Ward in Houston announced
that mid-course correction was performed at a distance of about 169,000 nautical miles from the Earth. The spacecraft velocity, 4,075.6 feet per second.
The notion of space voyages, of course, is almost as old as man's understanding of the existence of space and the vastnesses of the distances involved. Sometimes science fiction has been wise and perceptive. Sometimes it has been inaccurate. But one of the true space pioneers of our time, Dr. Wernher von Braun, points out that only the most advanced modern technology has really made these journeys possible. Jules asked Dr. von Braun to comment on the old dreams and the modern reality.
When you were, as a youngster,
blowing up backyards and parks outside Berlin. Did you ever dream that at this point in your life we'd be ready to land on the moon?
Well, practically, to tell you the truth, I dreamed very much of going to the moon even then. But, you know, when you are 14 years old, things look a lot simpler. Nor did I know at that time what $1 billion was. It never occurred to me what a monstrous undertaking, as far as monetary efforts concerned, it would really be to do it. I think there's also another aspect to this, and I think in this respect I'm not alone either. Many people who have written on spaceflight 20, 30 years ago have kind of skimmed over certain aspects of the thing that turn out to be very important. For instance, the electronic digital computer was only invented rather recently and plays a very important part in making spaceflight possible. There's not a single reference to electronic digital computers in all the early literature, so how people would have navigated and how flight control and these kind of things that we are so used to would have been done without these machines is a little hard to understand. Maybe other smarter people would have found better ways of doing it, but it is hard to envision how without a digital computer you could pull an Apollo mission off.
Jules Verne's three pilots from Earth to Moon carried a sextant as well as a dog and a lot of chickens and fresh vegetables and a big viewing port, and they thought that was enough to get there with.
Well, and when you think what kind of navigational equipment was used by the explorers on their sailing ships, you must marvel at the efficiency and that they really got where they set out to go. And it may very well be that superior astronomical navigation methods would have been developed had we not the advantage of electronic computers. On the other hand, imagine you had to do a thing like this without radio. Hard to conceive how we can even develop the rocketry without telemetry, without knowing what went wrong last time and being able to take remedial steps next time.
Wednesday now, about a day away from splashdown. The astronauts put on a TV show.
We know there's a lot of scientists from a number of countries standing by to see the lunar samples, and we thought you'd be interested in seeing that they really are here. These two boxes are the sample return containers. They're vacuum-packed containers that were closed in a vacuum on the lunar surface, sealed, and then brought inside the LM and put inside these fiberglass bags, zippered and resealed around the outside, and placed in these receptacles in the side of the command module.
First and land, reflecting the events of the past several days, a verse from the Psalms comes to mind to me. When I consider the heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which thou hast ordained, what is man that thou art mindful of him? Apollo 11, Friday North.
Apollo 11 is now 14,000 miles out from Earth, speeding homeward at 11,000 miles an hour to end its epic 8-day lunar flight. It's headed toward a landing 950 miles southwest of Hawaii. The weather, good generally, but windy, up to 21 miles an hour, with seas running to 6 feet. Astronauts Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Mike Collins may be a bit uncomfortable in that rolling sea state while they're waiting for the helicopters to pick them up and take them to the prime recovery vessel, the aircraft carrier Hornet, now standing by in the recovery area after having moved 215 miles northwestward during the night to avoid thunderstorms and high seas.
Apollo 11, Houston, we see you getting ready for SEP. Everything looks mighty fine down here.
Thank you, Renegade.
SEP, separation of the command module and service module, 15 minutes before reentry, 2,000 miles out from Earth.
And as separation takes place, the astronauts will tamp the spacecraft around a bit so that when they use their little reaction control thrusters to pull away from the service module, it's harmlessly out of their way.
We confirm separation now from on-the-ground readings from telemetry. We can confirm separation.
That's one of the three critical parts of the reentry process. The service module is now safely away from Apollo 11. Now it's tilted down to face the searing reentry heat.
Apollo 11 Houston, you're still looking mighty fine here. You're cleared for landing.
Capcom, Ron.
Yeah, we appreciate that, Ron. Got secure, standard locked.
Roger.
For a pilot, that must be a terribly reassuring phrase. You are cleared for landing after coming back from the moon.
Well, that's probably one of the few flying machines, Tom, that won't be held up by air traffic delays. When it starts back in, nothing better be in its way.
And 225 there, if you can reach it, Buzz. The last two circuit breakers in the second row from the bottom, you can punch those in.
36,000 feet per second.
And Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins.
10-11 Houston, don't mess around with that 225 there. Okay.
They're flying this reentry rather more comfortably than on many past flights. They're not wearing their pressurized spacesuits. They're wearing constant wear garments to be a little more comfortable.
10-11 Houston, you're going over the hill there shortly. You're looking mighty fine to us.
See you later.
Over the hill is the phrase that entry control
time.
Uses. For loss of radio.
Very shortly. Range to go to splash, 1,533 nautical miles. There's blackout. This blackout period should last for about 3 minutes 45 seconds. At blackout, we were showing velocity 36,237 feet per second. Range to go to splash 1,510 nautical miles.
And that speed is almost exactly what Apollo Control was shooting for the right kind of reentry at the right position without excessive heating on the spacecraft. You don't want to go any higher than 37,000 feet per second.
Elapsed time for end of blackout, 195 hours, 7 minutes even.
So at last, the greatest adventure in history ended as it had begun, perfectly. The first anti-contamination measures went quickly, and the astronauts were then hoisted aboard the helicopter from the carrier Hornet, where President Nixon watched in obvious excitement. He waited to personally welcome them after they'd entered the mobile quarantine facility, where they were to begin their 17-day isolation period.
Stand on the deck, Spencer. Let's listen to that band. Presidents applauding as they play Columbia, the gem of the earth. Columbia, of course, is that module out there.
There goes the first astronaut. Up in the village unit.
Up in the village unit.
Dr. Carpentier slides it open, and here they come. Here they come, the three astronauts, Armstrong, Aldrin, and Collins, waving to the crowd of cheering sailors, moving swiftly into the mobile quarantine facility. Rumble the flourishes. The astronauts, the curtains have been drawn. There they are in the rear window. The president signaling for applause from the crowd. Astronauts gather in the window.
Neil, Buzz, and Mike, I want you to know that I think I'm the luckiest man in the world. And I say this not only because I have the honor to be President of the United States, but particularly because I have the privilege of speaking for so many and welcoming you back to Earth. I can tell you about all the messages we've received in Washington, but most important, I had a telephone call yesterday. The toll wasn't, incidentally, as great as the one I made to you fellows on the moon. I made that collect, incidentally, in case you didn't know. But I called three of the greatest ladies and most courageous ladies in the whole world today, your wives. And from Jan and Joan and Pat, I bring their love and their congratulations. We think it's just wonderful that they could have participated, at least through television, in this return. We're only sorry they couldn't be here. And also, I've got to let you in a little secret. I made a date with them. I invited them to dinner on the 13th of August, right after you come out of quarantine. It will be a state dinner held in Los Angeles. The governors of all the 50 states will be there, the ambassadors, others from around the world and in America. And they told me that you would come, too. And all I want to know, will you come? We want to honor you then.
We'll do anything you say, Mr. President. Anytime.
One question I think that all of us would like to ask. As we saw you bouncing around in that boat out there, I wonder if that wasn't the hardest part of the journey. Was that the only... Did any of you get seasick?
No, we didn't, and it was one of the harder parts, but it was one of the most pleasant, we can assure you.
Yeah. Well, I can only summarize it because I don't want to hold you now. You have so much more to do. And gee, you look great. You feel as good as you look.
Oh,
you
feel
great.
I feel just perfect, Mr. President.
Yeah. Are you? I understand your Frank Borman says you're a little younger by reason of having going into space. Is that right? Do you feel that way, a little younger?
We're a lot younger than Frank Borman.
There he is over there. Come on over, Frank, so they can see you. And you going to take that lying down? Today, yeah?
Looks like he has aged in the last couple of weeks.
Come on, Frank.
Mr. President, the one thing I wanted, you know, we have a poet in Mike Collins, and he really gave me a hard time for describing the words of fantastic and beautiful. And you were, I counted them, in 3 minutes up there, you used four fantastics and two beautifuls.
Well, just let me close off with this one thing. I was thinking, as you know, as you came down, and we knew it was a success, and it had only been 8 days, just a week, a long week, that this is the greatest week in the history of the world since the creation. Because as a result of what happened in this week, the world is bigger infinitely. As a result of what you've done, the world's never been closer together before. And we just thank you for that. And I only hope that all of us in government, all of us in America, we can do our job a little better. We can reach for the stars just as you have reached so far from the stars. We don't want to hold you any longer. Anybody have a last word? How about promotions? Do you think we could arrange something?
Oh, we're just pleased to be back and very honored that you were so kind as to come out here and welcome us back. Yeah. And we look forward to getting out of this quarantine and talking without having glass between us.
And incidentally, the speeches that you have to make at this dinner can be very short. And if you want to say fantastic or beautiful, that's all right with us. Don't try to think of any new adjectives. They've all been said.